Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
Man, besides my board having been sabotaged.
Yeah.
I'm fine. There was board sabotage, mixing board sabotage, but no, I'm fine, Andrew. How are you?
I have a four-year-old who loves the slides and buttons.
Yeah.
And he comes in here when nobody's awake, and he empties all the contents of my bag and draws on everything.
Yeah.
Colors on things. Cuts it with scissors.
Sabotages our mixing board.
I don't think he's sabotaging the mixing board. I think he is an audio engineer.
Oh, sure. He's like apprentice. He's like dad's levels were a little high in the last episode.
He's practicing. He knows that you guys think that I'm a little loud and I come in a little hot. So he backs my volume way down. He also thinks that with my volume back down, it's also reasonable that you should turn down my headset.
Are you low on the headset?
Just a touch.
How about now? We're better.
That's perfect.
We're mixing live, you guys.
Yeah. So, he does that. That's a thing that we're constantly in battle against.
Yeah, you know what? It turned out okay. All's well that ends well. Thanks for the editorial decision making, Kelvin. We really appreciate it. But yeah, no, Andrew, I'm good. It's the we are like full on into spring, approaching summer, which this is really one of my favorite times. Everything is getting green. My yard is getting in shape. I don't know how much I've talked about the yard this year yet.
Not enough yet.
But it's happening. It's happening. I decided, I don't know what, January 1st, somewhere around there. I was like, the yard has gone too long without being given attention. And so I went hard. I got up all the sort of dead stuff and the leaves. The kids had put leaves on. So, man, you know, hit it hard. Started fertilizing earlier than really you need to, but just to sort of bring it back. And I would say I think I'm about 15, maybe 20 days out from being real solid on the yard. I've given it more food than it certainly have given it more food than it actually needs. I've got another bag of Milorganite in the garage, ready to go. I think I'm going to give it two more weeks. It's going to be good to go all summer. I get nerdy about everything, obviously. I've been looking. Do you know anything about like micro nutrients that you can put in your yard? This is the like new trend in yard care.
I've read about them because I also want to have a good looking front lawn, but I realized, because of the position of my trailer in the driveway, there is a, I don't know, a 4x4 patch of grass right in the middle of the yard that just does not get sun. So it's mossy and dead.
I think you could put fescue in there and it would be just fine. I think you could put fine fescue in it and it would do fine.
Yeah, I need to fix it. That's my next weekend endeavor is trying to play a little catch up.
Yeah, I'd be careful overseeding this late. You're a little late to overseed. I would say just fertilize it, get it to come back as good as you can, and then in September we'll do it together. We'll make it a dad weekend, and we'll hit the yards together because I'm gonna hit it again this September. I'm gonna go hard.
Well, I got a weird yard year because right now my neighbors are excavating the backyard. Remove all the bamboo.
The bamboo. I'm sure we've talked about the bamboo on the show.
We have talked about the bamboo. So
long-time listeners.
Over the last month, my neighbors, rather than renting a little front loader or any kind of excavator, have been using hand tools. And we have probably, would you say like a 50-foot, 60-foot fence line?
Yeah, maybe even more than that. It might be 120 feet.
A good property line, fence line.
Yeah.
they have excavated the entirety of the width
with like shovels and picks,
shovels and pickaxes and loppers to get through. So they've excavated the entire fence line. What I didn't realize until they had done this is that their yard is actually about 2 feet higher than mine.
Oh.
So there was 2 feet of earth against the fence.
Oh my gosh.
Vertical before their ground level. So they've excavated an easy 10 yards.
Lots of dirt.
By hand to remove all the bamboo. And 2 days ago, they started in my yard. So they knocked out some fence boards and have been coming through the fence and doing the same. Because I have about an 18-inch retaining wall.
And just to be clear, this is by your at your request because of the bamboo.
Demand?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Legal demand, perhaps,
yeah,
even.
Yeah. Yes, this is all, this isn't just like a, hey, hi, welcome to my backyard. This was orchestrated and insisted upon. So they started in my backyard, which means my backyard is just going to be kind of torn up. They've done a big chunk and are going to have to remove the retaining wall. And so I have an opportunity for a full reset this year. So
yeah,
I'm hoping over the next 2 weeks, they'll finish my yard and
September, man, that's the time to hit it. I think you're going to have to deal this summer because it's too late really to get new grass in the ground.
That's fine.
Yeah.
My first time we pull a trailer out, it's next month. So I can deal with my front lawn looking like trash.
Well, Andrew, we're not here to talk about yards. Although I easily at this point in my life could do a yard part, like a lawn podcast. I feel comfortable that I could get into it. It's way more prepared to do a lawn podcast than I was in 2018 to do a watches podcast, put it that way. And this is
yet here we are.
This has worked out okay. Yeah, no, we're not here to talk about lawns. We're here to talk about watches. And we're recording earlier in the week than we normally do.
Mm-hmm.
We normally record on Tuesday or Wednesday, which is vestigial to your time on the police force. No mm-hmm. longer on the police force, but we still record on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Because we publish on Thursdays and we're both procrastinators.
For old time's sake, we're recording on Sunday, which means that you won't hear us for what, 3.5 days
from several days
now?
Yes. 4 days. I mean, it's yeah. Thursday morning. So.
Yeah. So you won't hear us for several days. All that to say, we're not going to do a roundup because our roundup is still pretty fresh. We wanted to do something a little different.
We did.
I won't say we're going to do old school because I don't know that we've ever done this format before.
No, this is a little different. And this is kind of our jam is I'll pitch an idea and about an hour later, you've digested it, maybe refined it a little bit or come up with something that maybe better speaks to you.
And it's been once or twice that that's happened.
And we pivot a little bit while still keeping the core idea there.
I would say that's
collaborative idea.
I wouldn't say the pivot tonight better suited me. I think it just made sense in the context of where we're going with our conversation.
It absolutely made sense. Because I think with our original idea, I don't know. I mean, we never can get this done in an hour. I think we can have a little bit more meaningful conversation.
Initially, we were going to talk about watches at different price points. So we had sort of highlighted 4 price points. And as I was going through, I was like, you know, we ought to spend some more time at the $3,000 figure because I can think of off the top of my head like 4 or 5 really good candidates. And then as I started kind of looking more and more, all the watches that I was really interested in talking about were all sort of, and I was like, you know what? $3,000 is a really cool price point for dive watches.
Mm-hmm.
I think dive watches in particular, I think that is a real, diminishing diminishing returns inflection point, which is not to say you can't get more watch above 3,000. And there's some examples, I think, that we might sort of reference as we move through today. But at $3,000, A, there's a ton of variety. And B, there's some really, a lot of really, really interesting watches. So between the two of us, we've come up with, I don't know, 7 or 8 watches that we're going to kind of blast through. But I think the idea of today's show is that next level, or that sort of entry-level luxury watch, or maybe mid-level luxury watch, the $3,000 dive watch, it just feels like a really natural place for us to kind of have a whole show. You can do better, and you can do a lot of this for a lot less money, right? We've talked on this show a lot about Traska and Laurier, and Christopher Ward, I think is a big one. There are a lot of watches that you can get into for, you know, 500, 600, 1,000, even like $1,500. At $1,500, there are so many really spot on, very, very, very good watches. But we're not talking about those today. We're talking about that next level, that $3,000, mm-hmm. that $2,500 to $3,000 watch.
Which captures a little bit of an odd space for some watch pricing. There's some stuff that exists south of $3,000 that is really competitive with stuff that's at $5,000. And there's some kind of oddities, things that like maybe don't fit there. This is a tricky price point. There's some stuff in that zone, in that like north of 2, south of 4, that really don't belong there, at least in my opinion, that don't have the ass to be competitive. So part of why we're talking about tonight is the stuff that's really interesting in this spend some money zone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think with that, why don't we get into it? Because I like the sort of draft, and not that we're drafting watches, but we've got this list of watches in front of us, Andrew. I think we generally had
this. It is pure overlap. I added two things to the conversation as asides, and I'll send them to you now.
Do you just want to pull one from the top, and we'll get into it?
Why don't you start? Because I'm sending you links.
So okay. First watch, first $3,000-ish watch, and this watch actually comes in significantly below that. The first $3,000 dive watch, and this is kind of an obvious one, is the Doxa 300.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some other watches, the in particular the 300T, and then the brand new, newly released 200T, are both sort of in this world. But for this conversation, I think it makes sense for us to talk about the Doxa 300, and that's because of the pricing. This watch comes in at $2,490, and I think with that, it is actually the most affordable watch on our list, with both of those other versions, the 300T coming in at $1,890, and the 200T coming in well below that.
Yeah, the 200T is, they're pricing it at $1,590 right now.
But with the 300, I do think you're getting the most sort of modern and the most luxurious of the three options.
But also the most interesting, because you're getting a box sapphire in it. You're getting the 300 is a and the 300T are a really interesting pairing.
Hmm.
I would almost expect the 300 to be the box sapphire version, like the pure retro, big chunky beefcake. But the 300 is the one with the box sapphire. So to add a little bit of context here for those who are unfamiliar, the 300 and 300T are wholly independent lines within the Doxa lineup. The 300 has box sapphire, a little bit less water resistance.
Well, no, a lot less water resistance.
quite a bit. No, so no helium release valve. A little bit different case shape. Little bit shorter lug to lug. And yeah, 300 is the shorter lug to lug.
Yeah, so the the 300 comes in at 44 and a half lug to lug. Or excuse me, the 300T comes in at 44 and a half. Yep.
And the 300 at 42 and a half, which just changes the perspective of your lugs a little bit. It looks a little bit more refined in the 300. And then the T is just a beefy tool watch. It's, what, 15 thick, and the 300 is 13.4.
Yeah.
Without the box sapphire. It's interesting because if you look at these two watches side by side, it's not really clear why there's a $400 delta.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially if you're looking sort of top down, as most of us do when we look at these watches, you'd be mistaken, or you would be forgiven for kind of like, what's the difference here? What's the actual difference between these? You know, having handled both, the 300T, obviously, like you said, 15 plus millimeters, it's a big honking watch.
I think I'm a T guy.
Yeah, you've said that before, and yeah. I'm certainly a 300 guy. The 300T, although I'm attracted by 1,200 meters of water resistance, it's really cool. This is a big, badass, do-anything watch. Mm. The 300, I think, for me, is that the modern, sort of practical and elegant iteration of this.
Yeah, it's a much more appropriate desk diver / actual all-the-time diver. The T is just a beefcake, but I'm in a little bit of a beefcake phase right now. I'm like really struggling with some things.
What things are you struggling with?
I really want a 2018 overbuilt big badass dive watch.
Okay. What do you have? Do you have thoughts?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. The T's kind of in there. The full size Pelagos is in there, which is a watch that we're not going to talk about today. And that's kind of what I've pared down to. I think the full size Pelagos, I really wish could be in this conversation. But I'm also like, there's some Seamaster Pro kind of that's still like on the fringe of in the running and competition. Cause I know I would wear the shit out of that watch. I mean, James Bond did. So,
you know, I think we can come back to the Pelagos to maybe a little bit later, at least briefly. But yeah, so to kick us off, I think it's fair to allow Doxa to kick us off. In particular with that 300, I think as I sort of think about what's my dive watch, I'm going to get like a next level dive watch. And what am I going to wind up with? This one's always on that short list as I think through that process. So I think it makes sense. I think in some ways we're going to talk about a few other watches today that I think are sort of usurping that. But I think for a long time, up until maybe 5 or 6 years ago, it was maybe the undisputed king of that next level dive watch.
Yeah, because it's still, it holds this position at this price point that is still pretty accessible. You know, we're looking at $1,800 to $2,400 for a heritage brand.
Well, yeah, I guess
I mean, you know, a brand with some chops.
Yeah, sort of like a certainly a zombie brand, but with a bit of like bona fides to it.
Some legacy. It's got the story of, you know, the Jacques Cousteau. It's got things going for it.
Dirk Pitt.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got some great colorways, really classic, iconic even case design. And it's not crazy expensive. If you're in a mood to buy a no bullshit dive watch, you got a little bit of money to throw around, you're feeling a little reckless, $2,400 is a lot easier to swallow than 5 to 10. And there's no wait list. You can just go on the website today. You can buy it. I don't know if you can get them on Joma Shop. Joma Shop is always 17% off. Like, you can get a good deal on these, and you can get it today. It'll be in your mailbox within the week.
And you hit the nail on the head. In terms of watch iconography, this is the Doxa 300 is a player.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's next, Andrew?
Ooh, next up, I want to talk about maybe the kind of exact opposite in the Manta Ocean King.
Oh yeah, I feel what you're. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
So the Manta Ocean King, $2,550 from their website today. The Ocean King has gone through, I don't know, 200 iterations since its release.
Well, this is the V3, right?
It feels like many more. Yeah, I could be wrong.
I think this is the third. So the one that came out last year is the third generation of the Ocean King. Now, I don't think we have time today to talk about that update. Frank wrote a terrific review of this, which is on our website, and maybe we'll link to that. But yeah, I'm pretty sure this is Gen 3 of Manta's sort of dive watch. This is their dive watch.
Mm-hmm. And the Gen 3 is lovely. It's a 40.5 millimeter case. It's 12 millimeters thick, 48 lug to lug, 20 millimeter lugs, so as to fit appropriately the Everest straps. For those of you who are somehow unaware, all of Manta's watches have an option with Everest straps with curved ends that just fit perfectly. But the reason I say this is exactly the opposite of the Doxa is that this is a young brand that's still outproven itself. It is refined, elegant. This is not a tool watch. There's no version of this that looks like a banger. Like, and in the way of like you bang it up and you swing a hammer while you're wearing it.
It's interesting. I think that this is sort of the epitome of a tool watch.
It is the epitome of a tool watch, but it's also so elegant. The way they've incorporated polish on the case and the color on the dial. This is a closer to a dress diver, at least every time I've had one in my hands. Hmm. Right. This is like the same kind of high polished spaces as, you know, if we take it way back to like Orient, you know, of their like dress divers, like that Kamasu Mako zone with like a lot of polish, a very elegant watch, but with all of the chops of a terrific tool watch, because these are great tool watches and they look fantastic. And, you know, it's Manta, who's this like kind of new kid on the block who's doing some of the coolest R&D in the industry in like watch development and doing shit so cool.
You know, I think for a lot of people, Manta is a bit of a tough pill to swallow because of how new they are. I think we're still in this phase of watches where people don't know, like, do they, you know, is micro brand a bad word? Is Monta a micro brand? You know, what is a micro brand? Does it make sense to invest in a fly-by-night operation? Blah, blah, blah. Monta was a brand that existed before we started doing this, you know, although in the earliest phases, we've sort of seen them mature into what is now a really pretty cohesive and well supported. They've got good foundations at this point, mm-hmm. and their supply chain is really good. And what we've seen is what Justin promised, I think, the very first time they came on the show, which is sort of a steady climb in prices to get them to a margin that would allow that company to do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
gone are the days of an $1,800 Monta.
That's yeah. right. And time will tell. You know, these things still fetch pretty good prices on the secondary market. You can still get a really pretty decent discount. And so that's always kind of the question mark, right? If you can buy one of these new, you know, like new in box, LINB, is there
LNIB?
Yeah. Yeah, whatever. Sorry, I was just trying to be cute.
You are.
It for, you know, maybe 600, 700 off, then, you know, there's a value question.
But that's not a huge price delta. You know, most things are more than $600-$700 off when you're buying them secondhand. I think that speaks to the value of the brand, is that a killer deal is $600 off of the new price. And when we're looking now at Monta pricing, which hovers north of 2,000, everything's between 2,000, $2,500. $2,600, you know, the Ocean King's $2,550 right now. You know, to get a screaming deal on this at $1,800, these yeah. things are holding their value. And I think it really speaks to the place that they've carved out in the market.
And, you know, I'm going through our list right now, just sort of skimming our list. I think I can say confidently that this is the nicest watch on our list. There's one other watch that I think is going to be pretty close to that. But this is the
nicest new.
Well, yeah, the best constructed watch is what I'm saying. Like the highest quality in terms of the bracelet construction.
Monta bracelets are so good.
The dials and the markers, all of this. Objectively speaking, you know, so there's obviously a subjective analysis to all these things, but just in terms of the refinement and the quality and fit and finish that you're getting on this is the nicest watch we're going to talk about. And so coming in at $2,500 or $2,550, which is a solid, Seiko or Laurier below our $3,000 price point, you're getting the nicest watch on the list.
And pulling a $2,500 Seiko, you run the risk of a misaligned bezel.
Like, sure.
You there's a coin toss on the bracelet. It's, as much as I love Seiko, there are inherent problems with Seiko. And they don't exist with Monta, because a real human person touches every single watch. Who gives a shit? Like, a real human person who gives a shit touches every single watch.
So this is a bit of a cheat, but we didn't really have like hard limits. We're not competing today, or even pretending to compete. But you've got to talk about this watch. I found this watch at $3,285, which I think effectively, if you're looking for a $3,000 dive watch, 3285 is going to be fine. We've got to talk about it. The Tudor Black Bay mm-hmm. 58. So just for the record, I've got this on Joma Shop with a Mother's Day sale for $3,285. And I think if you work, you can usually find these new for a little over $3,000. the Black Bay 58. What more to say?
And the Black Bay 58 is at this price point the little brother of the most iconic dive watch ever created. It's a super comfortable watch. They're so attractive. They're simple. They're sized really well. They are, oh gosh, I had the size. So this is the 39 millimeter case. 39 millimeter case is 11.9 thick.
That's the 58, right? It's the 39 by 12. So virtually the same dimensions as the Monta. Monta's a little bit wider and you know a tenth of a millimeter thicker.
Mm-hmm.
These watches are basically 1-to-1. I do think with the Monta you're getting a better looking bracelet for sure. Probably a better constructed bracelet. Slightly, it's marginal, and the dials on these two watches don't compare. I mean, look, just objectively speaking, the dial on the Monta Ocean King is a much, much nicer dial, but the Black Bay 58 is the reigning champ, right?
It's the Black Bay 58. I wish Tudor had put a little bit more into their clasp.
I don't think they need to, but yeah, it would be nice if they did.
It's just an afterthought. And I don't know, I haven't had a recent Monta bracelet in hand to feel their clasp, because I know they did some changes.
The new ones are really spectacular. They're long, right? Which is always going to be the criticism of that just the length. And I do think that they got that length down a little bit, which is to say it's about
one wrist wide.
125% of ultimately what I would like a clasp to be.
You know, I actually really like it because I we're going back to the Ocean King here, incidentally. I felt like it made it way easier to size the bracelet. Cause the clasp takes up so much space that you're doing less link changes on each side. I have a short Y axis wrist, but my x-axis is long.
I would have said that the opposite. You've got kind of a round wrist.
No, I have a thin wrist, but wide. Thin and wide. I have rectangular wrist as opposed to like circular.
Okay.
At least I feel in the way my watches wear.
Sure.
I'm good with that long clasp.
Yeah, no, it works for me too. I think if you've got a smaller wrist, I think you could have trouble with that. But yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah.
So back onto the 58. This isn't a cheat, man. This is in the zone. It's over $3,000, but this is the dive watch. If you can find this at under $3,500, you're getting a screaming deal. They're super comfortable, and they're the watch, right? They're it.
Yeah, right. At this $3,000 level, this is the one that I think most people are going to get, which, you know, you're probably going to have to push a little bit past that. If you've said arbitrarily 3,000 is my number, you're gonna have to push a little bit past that. But you'd be hard-pressed to find a better made-it watch at that price. I mean, this is the one, mm-hmm. I think, right now. And I think until something major happens in the industry, this is the one to beat. It's an interesting thought experiment. You and I, knowing what we know, and both of us being huge Monta fans, notwithstanding the people, we're both friends with Justin and Mike, and notwithstanding that, I think I can make a pretty good case that at $1,000 less or $800 less, certainly, that the Monta is a better value,
mm-hmm.
but I still would be inclined to at least take a look at that Tudor.
I think I'm happier with the Ocean King and more excited by the Black Bay.
Yeah.
Because the Ocean King is going to be everything that the Black Bay is, but not.
Yeah. You know, and maybe it's like a high school reunion versus a watch gathering decision, right? You know,
yeah, maybe
you wear the tutor to the high school reunion, but maybe you wear the Monta to the watch gathering because it's more interesting, or someone might know, or
the fuck, marry, kill scenario. You marry the Ocean King.
Yeah.
That's right. But God, you want to fuck that Black Bay. Like I do. Yeah, I love that watch. And this watch is on and off my very short list of a banger tool dive watch right now.
You know, I think that those are the usual suspects, Andrew. Mm-hmm. And so I apologize if you're listening to us and you're like, guys, you're 35 minutes in and you have not surprised. I think we've got some fun ones coming up.
We're not here for shock value or really insight. We're not smart people. If you guys, like, I don't know what you guys want from us. Next up, I'm going to talk about the C60 Trident Pro 300, and these are significantly less. These are coming in $1,000, not $100, $1,095 on a bracelet. If you're in the United States, you're going to pay a little bit of customs import tax. I don't remember how much my C63 was. I don't think I paid, actually. I think I sent Christopher Ward the invoice. I did. I sent Christopher Ward the invoice and they covered it.
They covered it?
Yeah. And they released my watch. Because I remember bitching about it when it got hung up in customs. And I asked Will and he's like, oh, just send it to Christopher Ward and they'll solve it. And they did, in fact.
So an $1,100 watch, Andrew, how do you think this one fits into this conversation of the $3,000 watch?
It, because of what it is, Christopher Ward does such a great job punching out of its weight class, the finishing, the fit, the materials, the design overall makes it so much more than what you're paying for. Right? If you hold a Black Bay and an Ocean King and a Trident, the three of those watches in your hand, you're going to easily find the most expensive because you're going to recognize the Tudor. Oh, that's the most expensive. And then comparing the Ocean King and the Trident side by side, you're going to have a hard, it's a coin toss on which one you're going to be able to pick out to be the next most expensive watch. Because Christopher Ward does such a good job with what they're putting out. Everything is refined. Everything is just right. Now there's a real difference. You know, for weirdos like us, we can pick it out immediately. But for the normal person buying a watch who's looking to spend some money on a baller dive watch, this has to be in that $3,000 conversation. 'Cause it wins every single time in the $1,000 conversation. I don't think there's anybody else that competes that would win in that $1,000 conversation over the Trident.
Yeah, but we're not talking about $1,000 watches. But so that's my question.
It's also not $1,000. It's $1,100. But I want to talk about it. I want to bring this into the conversation because of what Christopher Ward does with their watches. They punch way out of their weight class and do some banging shit, and it's not $1,000. So I uncheated you.
You know, for my money, there is a Christopher Ward watch that I think I would include in this conversation.
The Elite?
As sort of, I think the Aquitaine GMT is something that I might consider throwing into here. Which is not to say that I think it fits, but I think it's a watch that you might consider. I know there's another watch on your list, which I would kind of talk about in the same way. It's like, you know, maybe you don't have to push that hard. Maybe you can get all the things you're looking at for, you know, about half of your budget or a little bit more than half of your budget. With that said, you know, I think you're spot on, which is to say, Christopher Ward is really doing a lot at this, you know, $1,400-$1,500 price range. You know, there's the super compressor, the Elite GMT 1000. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I think that there's, excuse me. I think that there's some great options from Christopher Ward.
The Lightcatcher case is one of the coolest things in the industry right now.
Yeah, I think maybe the point then is Christopher Ward's not a $3,000 watch, not because they're not making watches as good as, but just perhaps because they're cheaper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
And their finishing isn't $3,000 watch finishing.
Yeah,
that's
right.
It just is not.
Well, but neither is Doxa.
No, but Manta is.
Yeah.
Tudor is. And there's no perfect watch out there. There's a lot that come really close. There's a lot of end game watches. It's what are you willing to trade off? Yeah. You know, in Doxa and in Christopher Ward, you're trading off finishing. You're getting a more tool watch. In Manta, you're paying the dollars for the finishing and for the technology and for the R&D and for the cool factor. Same, and with Tudor, you're paying for the logo at the 12 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think you're getting a hell of a watch, mm-hmm. too, but... It's interesting because you said there's not a perfect watch. And I might have argued even just a few months ago that Patek with the Nautilus had come pretty close. But then they were only 30 meters. Now they only have 30 meters of watch.
You're not going to get it.
Let's talk about Seiko. Let's talk about Seiko. And not Grand Seiko. We're going to talk about some $3,000 two watches from Seiko at the $3,000 price point. Now, Seiko's got actually quite a bit of stuff, you know, at that $2,000 to $3,000 level. But I think we're going to, I'd like to talk about two watches. So the first one is the sort of classic Marine Master SLA, Marine Master 300. This is a watch that comes in, you know, 3,100, you know, anywhere from 3,000 to 3,100 new. This is the classic Marine Master 300, the SLA 021. So this was redialed a few years back to have a Prospects dial, which I think a lot of people don't love that Prospects. There's some brand confusion there. It's still a Marine Master 3000. Or excuse me, 300. Have I been saying 3,000?
I have not been listening.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This watch is gorgeous. It is a big, chunky watch. You know, big monocoque case. But I think at $3,000...
It's also not big. It's only 12.3 thick. It's 47.2 lug to lug, 39.5 case width. It's no,
so okay. So, wait, are we talking about you've jumped the gun? Yeah. So, this is the SLA 021. So, case size 44.3, 15.4 thick, a 50.5 millimeter lug to lug. You've got 300 meters of water resistance and a Seiko 8L movement. This is the classic Marine Master with the big, chunky mm-hmm. case. And in fairness, it's not that chunky. Big giant 7.5 millimeter crown at 4:30. This is the
date at 4:30.
Date at three.
We're talking about wholly different.
Andrew, this is the Marine Master 300.
We are
the SLA 021.
I don't have an SLA 201 in front of me.
021. This is the classic Marine Master 300.
Yeah,
these come in at about $3,100 from Seiko. You've got probably Seiko's best clasp that they make, which is to say it's still a piece of shit. But this watch is cool. This watch is cool in a way that makes it, for me, in that conversation, puts it in that conversation. If I'm going to spend $3,000 on a dive watch, this is a watch that I'm going to think about getting.
You sent me so many Seikos.
I sent exactly 2 Seikos.
Well, give me a second here so I can catch up, because I'm looking at there it is. Okay. Yeah, this isn't mine for $3,000.
I'm sorry.
This isn't the thing I want for $3,000.
All right, what do you want for $3,000?
I love these. I mean, they're iconic. They're big. They're chunky. They're the thing. If we're in the 3,000. Well, so you said you were going to talk about 2. So you can talk about your second.
Well, so the other watch that I think is interesting at this price point is the Numerine Master. Now, these came out end of last year. And I think immediately the enthusiast gut reaction was, how do you put the Marine Master label? How do you put the Marine Master label on this watch?
On not a Marine Master.
And so, Seiko takes umbrage with their branding and they make decisions. This has got that sort of classic SLA. Or excuse me, that classic 1965 Seiko dive DNA. You can sort of see it as you look at the watch, but it doesn't have a monocoque case. It's not 300 meters. So how is this a Marine Master? Well, I think what this is Seiko's modern Marine Master. Love it or hate it. I actually think this watch is pretty terrific. So we've got a local AD here in town. I did wind up trying one of these on. It wasn't for sale at the time, which I was like, well, that's good for me because I wasn't going to buy it anyway.
But you might have.
This watch, I think in pictures, looks a little awkward. In particular, I don't love the Endlink integration. So just to be clear, this is the Seiko SJE 101. 1965 Marine Master. With that said, once you get past that, the quality here is there. 40 millimeter case, just a hair over 12 thick, 200 meters of water resistance. You've got a fine clasp. The clasp isn't anything to write home about. But this is a watch that I think if you're an enthusiast and you want something really nice and you want something really fun, I think that there you could do a lot worse than this. At the end of the day, you could do better than this too, which I think is the point of this show. Mm-hmm. I think I'd have reservations in recommending this to someone, unless this was a person that knew what they wanted. I'd have reservations recommending this watch.
If this is a pure Seiko person, this is a Seiko recommendation. But I'm with you. I think you can do better for less. You can do better for a little bit more. We love Seiko. This is an awkward space for them to exist in, this $3,000 kind of zone.
Yeah, I think they struggle in this
zone. They don't live well here, which is fine because that's not really what we want Seiko to be good at. It'd be cool if they were, but it's not an expectation of them to punch hard at this weight class.
Yeah. You know, you get one of 10 62 MAS reinterpretations with a 6L movement and a $3,000 price tag. If you really want it, I'll support it.
Yeah. And you know, I wouldn't be unhappy with this watch. You know, you'd love this watch.
Yeah, the fit and finish on this thing is really pretty spectacular for a Seiko. I was pretty impressed by it.
And for it being, being poo-pooed on by Marine Master purists, this is what Seiko's doing. Seiko is diluting all of their heritage lines, updating them a little bit, diluting them a little bit. And that's what we get, right? That's progress.
Andrew, what's next for you?
Oh, next up for me. I want to talk about the Tag Heuer Aqua Racer.
The 200.
The Professional 200.
Yeah.
This is, CH Premier 2850 is where we've got this. And these are spectacular. 40 millimeter case. 200 meters of water resistance. And they're just... they're super Tag Heuer. They still feel like the 90s with kind of blocky geometry on them and all the good stuff. This is something I'd recommend to anybody, because Tag Heuer is living in the modern era. This isn't the Tag Heuer of the 90s, though this is so of the 90s and early 2000s. This is a cool watch. It's a little bit weird, but it's such a cool watch. Big crown guards, big oversized crown, great color on the dial, great bracelet. This is the one.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a sport diver, right? This doesn't look like a big tool diver. This looks like a sport watch with a rotating bezel.
Yeah, I think that's right. So I think these were introduced sometime in 2022. Mm-hmm. You can find actually some pretty good deals on these. These actually hover. I think MSRP on these is like $2,800, but you can find these regularly pretty close to $2,000. I think this is a pretty terrific watch. It's got that 2000s, late 90s, 2000s sort of aesthetic with a really, the bezel is really sort of aggressive and faceted. But in the package of a perfectly modern, really terrific watch, you can get these in solar too. I mean, there's a ton of options. I'd probably go just the mechanical or the automatic on this, really a pretty terrific watch. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I think you get that branding, you get Tag Heuer's sort of new commitment to the enthusiast. This to me is very much an enthusiast watch made for people that appreciate the brand, but without any of the shortcuts that Tag was taking a dozen years ago.
Yeah, and they're still living in the shadow of.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Though they're not existing in that place anymore. Tag's doing some really cool shit.
Great teak dials on these. And you're getting a good brand. I mean, it's not Tudor. It's perhaps not even Manta, at least these days. But, the truth is most Tag Heuers are going to be more expensive than this. Most Tag Heuers that are this good are going to be more expensive than this in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of the entry level Tag Heuer dive watch, and it's mechanical and it's really, really good.
Where to the golf course, man? Everyone will like it there.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, I'd wear this to the golf course. Great lume on these too, by the way.
What you got?
I'm gonna do a bit of a audible, because while this is a dive watch, I would say this is a dive watch. We've got an extra feature here. I love these. So this is the Longines Hydro Conquest GMT. Mm. Honorable mention Spirit GMT or the Zulu Time. I went with in the spirit of a dive watch show, I went with the Hydro Conquest GMT. This is a big diver. It's a 43 millimeter, 22 millimeter lug width, 52 lug to lug, almost 13 thick. But it is a terrific watch. These things have fantastic finishing. They come in at MSRP just under $3,000. The coloring on this is great. They've got that sort of olive FDE, not FDE, but sort of like drabby green. They've got a classic sort of black, gray, and red. They've got some fantastic blue iterations of this. This is a terrific watch. One of my favorite watches that was released in the last couple of years. And at $3,000, I've got $3,000 that I'm going to drop on a dive watch. This is going to get consideration.
It has to be in the conversation because it's big, it's chunky, it's beautiful. The crown guards on it are in and of themselves a reason to consider this watch because well-executed crown guards are the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brand with a ton of heritage, but it's also a little boring.
Oh, gosh. Do you think this is boring?
A little bit, which makes it my speed, right? It's my kind of boring.
Okay.
And that's not a slight. It's a, ooh, you are unassuming. It's a kind of gray man boring,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
Like the gray man can look good, but is also like a little forgettable. And that's what this is for me. And this is my speed.
You know, I think that
I hate their website though. I hate it. Hate it.
I think that if you were truly looking for a dive watch, you're not getting some of the quick adjust. You're not getting the super secure clasp that you're getting with some of the other watches on this list, but you're still getting all the things. This is a 300 meter water resistance watch. It's certainly dive capable. You are getting more of a tool watch, I think, than a pure diver. But mm-hmm. this watch could do anything.
Yeah, the push button clasp as a it presents some possible risks as a diving watch.
Yeah, perhaps. And again, I don't know. You know, take this as you will. I think this watch is on my list. And so, like I said, it's not a cheat because this is a dive watch.
But it's a dive GMT, so it's a bonus.
We're getting a little extra. And I think that for me, Longines and Monta really are existing in the same space in terms of who ought to be looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for me, this watch looks the part.
Yeah. I like the
gorgeous watch.
I like the black Ocean King more than the black.
Same, but I really love this blue, the blue version of the Hydro Conquest. I think it's just absolutely stunning. I like the green too.
It's really good blue. I don't like the green.
I don't like the loom on the green, so
no,
it's a miss for me just in terms of the loom and the gilt.
I don't like the bronze either.
Yeah,
I don't like their colors. I think is maybe it.
What's next, Andrew?
Next up, I'm going to talk about another little bit of a cheap, lower price point watch. My last low price point in the Marathon Large Divers automatic GSAR steel coming in at $1,800. And this is my other, like, it does all the things, but it isn't $3,000. And these are not attractive watches. They are pure purpose built tool watches. And I love them. Tiny dials on these because there's so much bezel and rehot on them that just like it's a bezel that would be appropriate for a 38 millimeter watch. And these are 41 millimeters. They are
Ooh, where's the rest of it? 41 case, 14 thick, 20 millimeter lugs, 300 meters of water resistance. I mean, these are Trit gas tubes for Loom. I mean, these are just no bullshit tool watches.
You know, when you're searching for dive watches in this space, these come up a lot. These come up in the searches a lot. We, you know, someone will say, I'm looking for a dive watch under 3,000. You'll go to the thread. Someone will be like, well, if you want a pussy watch, you can get a Tudor. But if you want a man watch, you can get a Marathon G-Star, which I'm saying that with some derision, obviously. But I do think that that is the concept of this watch. Mm-hmm. This is a really tough, durable beater watch.
And they're using Sellita movements, a Sellita 200 in these. Like, you're getting a no bullshit top to bottom watch. These got to be in the conversation, depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah, for me, the quality on these isn't there. I'm sure the durability is there, but the fit and finish just isn't there for me. The clasp on these is absolute dog shit. You mentioned it earlier, but the distance from the crystal to the dial, the rehot is really
it's long. Half the depth of the case.
And so you get this like huge, like vacant space in the, I actually don't love this watch. I like the idea of it. Actually having this on my watch, my wrist, wasn't a pleasurable experience at all. And again, the fit and finish isn't there for me on this. This is simply not a value there when it comes to fit and finish. So short of having like an acquisition system watch that actually perhaps gets issued to someone, I don't know who.
I don't think anyone's been issued this watch.
Well, as someone must, right? But it's not a watch that I would consider in this conversation. But I think if you're someone who's, perhaps in search and rescue or maybe some sort of emergency.
This is a super specific watch.
Yeah,
in that I want this watch. And it's for a specific type of person.
Yeah.
Because I don't know even that it's search and rescue or any of those things. It's for a specific type of person. But
the Cole Penningtons of the world.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a cool watch, though. Undeniably cool. It's for me, it doesn't fit into the conversation, but it is undeniably cool. The tritium on the second hand.
Yes.
You've got like a little trit tube on the second hand. It's terrific. I actually really like the Arctic versions of these. The Black Dial is the classic, but the Arctic one's pretty cool.
There's so much space inside that, like between the dial and the crystal. It's a pie pan, but no pie inside.
Last watch for me. We've got some honorable mentions that I think we'll talk about. And this is the one that on the list that I find myself the most like intrigued by, like, oh, that's on this list, like, oh, maybe that's the one. The Xinyu 50. 41 millimeters, 11 tooth thick, fully coated case. This is not the titanium, this is the steel one, but we've got a tegumented case. You've got 301, tegumented bezel, not a tegumented case. Tegumented bezel on this guy. But 2740 from Watch Buys. Meters steel. Of water resistance, submarine steel. This thing is a terrific watch and a really compelling watch at this price point. It is different than anything else we've talked about. Mm-hmm. You look at the Ocean King, you look at the Longines, you look at the Tudor. There are a lot of similarities. The Doxa, of course, is its own thing. Doxa's Doxa. But this, the Xinyu 50 is in its own world, right? Mm-hmm. You would see this on someone's wrist across a room and be like, homie's wearing a Xin.
Look at you. You got a U50. How'd you buy a Xin?
Yeah.
Because they're impossible to buy. You can't buy them direct from Xin.
You can buy it on WatchBuys right now.
But you can buy them on WatchBuys. Zin has to be bought from a person. I'm not super convinced that Zin is actually a company because you can't buy watches from them. I love the
U50. You can buy this in stock, ships immediately from WatchBuys.
Yeah.
But that's Zin's sort of U.S. retailer. You can buy one of these today, right now. From Zin's only retailer in the United States.
BNIB. I love the U50. I love all the iterations of the U50. Zin is one of the most interesting brands in the industry to me because they're doing such German stuff. They don't care how it looks. They just want it to work really well. And then there's a guy like nearish to the end who's like, let's make it look okay.
I think this watch looks terrific.
Like the 556 is one of my favorite watches of all time. The U50 is certainly a top 10. But you know what? I struggle to bring it top of mind. And I don't know why.
Well, I know why. I know why I wouldn't like this watch or why this watch, I struggle with this watch is because of the clasp. Zin's clasps are dog shit, to use that term for the second time in relation to a clasp. They're terrible. Stamped clasps, it bugs me. It bugs me on a watch of this caliber to have a clasp that bad. But that's the only thing I don't like about this watch.
But this is a watch you put on a good nylon.
No, I'm wearing it on the H-Link.
And the H-Link looks good, but this is...
I think if Zin elevates this clasp to something milled and high quality and in-house, the quality of this watch for me goes through the roof.
But it also goes up $500.
$500 for a milled clasp?
Yeah.
No.
That's what they're going
to
do.
I mean, the cost to Zin on an upgraded clasp would probably be $30 a unit. So even if they're really milking you, that's like a $300 increase. Even if they're going hard in the paint and just milking that new clasp, it's still a $300 difference.
But they don't care because they're happy with it. They don't...
Yeah, like, no, you're right. They have no reason to
upgrade Zin's this. New releases are like, hey, we've done this exact same watch in a new material.
We put oil in it.
Yeah, we got it oily. This is not a iterative company.
Andrew, any other watches you're dying to talk about?
I think given our time, I don't think I have anything else.
I think the last thing I want to mention, and you really ought to think about this, you can get a used Seamaster 300, chronometer Seamaster 300 for under $3,000 all day long.
All day or day. And you can get any colorway, any of the dial variations.
41, 36.
I really struggle with a Seamaster dial in that I want the waves, but I don't like them. I way prefer the non-waved dial, but if I'm going to get a Seamaster, it's got to be a wave dial, which I also don't particularly care for. so they're on and off my list because of that dilemma.
Yeah. Well, and that's fair. I really
want to try a 36.
Love the wave dial.
I want to put a 36 on because I think a 36 would be fucking perfect.
I think they're too shrimpy, but that's a terrific option. So I think that kind of rounds up the conversation. If you think there's a watch that we missed, obviously there's a bunch of watches. The Formex Reef, I think, is a terrific. Mm-hmm. I didn't talk about it because it really comes in below the rest of these, both in terms of cost and I think what you're getting, but it's a really terrific watch. There's a number of watches, Christopher Ward, pretty much everything they make, it could fit in this conversation. But I think these are the ones really, I think we hit all the biggies that you've got to be, you've got to be looking at when you have this conversation.
Mm-hmm. And we hit the biggest. We hit, I don't know, 10, maybe like the first 10, but there's another 30 that are in the conversation, I think.
So this is a chronometer 300 with the Brosnan, bracelet, wave dial, available right now. It looks, the bracelet's got some wear on it. It's got some wear polish, but this thing looks terrific. $3,000 bucks, $3,000, $3,003. Coming from a dealer in Denmark, 2006 manufacturer.
Ooh.
Yeah. So something to think about. Andrew, we've done it. The $3,000 dive watch. Other things. What do you got?
Ooh, I'm pretty sure I've talked about this before, but I'm going to talk about it again because I interacted with it significantly today. The Lodge cast iron pro griddle reversible cooking surface. These are $75 from Wilco, and they are a cast iron pan on one side, grill side on the other. They are phenomenal. I wanted to use mine today because I was making Cubans for dinner. I wanted a grill pan. So I was like, oh, I need to yank that thing out. It was a little bit icky.
So just from sitting in the cupboard,
yeah, just from being in the cupboard. So I scraped it all down. I used my, I have a wool or a steel wool scouring pads. I just scraped it all to hell, right back down. Oiled it, threw it in the oven for an hour on both sides, seasoned it back up, threw it on my stovetop, got it nice and hot, made my Cubans on it, got good grill marks. I love this thing. There's a bit of a learning curve to it in using it on the stovetop because you got to find your hot spots or you just got to like slow heat, like medium low heat for 40 minutes ahead of time
to bring it all up
to bring time. The entire pan up to heat because it's not all over burners.
I actually have one of those bar burners right in the middle that would be perfect for this thing.
Yes, these are great. They take up no space through cabinet, right? They're the size of a baking sheet. The functionality on them is so good. They're just solid cast iron. I absolutely love this thing. It's a bit of a two-trick pony, right? As are all of your pans. It's a nice thing to have when you want it.
Yeah, like when you're making pancakes.
Yeah. And you have some time because you got to let it preheat so that the heat can evenly distribute across your entire surface. But if you have a bar heater, then that's maybe a non-issue.
Yeah, these are terrific. I keep meaning to get one. You know, Lodge does cast iron.
The best.
Well, as good as anybody else. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know, there's some companies right now that are making like really, really nice cast iron stuff. But I've used Lodge cast iron almost exclusively for the last 20 years. And it's just fantastic.
So I have a, oh gosh, not Mario Batali.
Emerald.
I have an emerald cast iron. I prefer his cast iron pan to the Lodge because of the handle shape.
Mm.
The Lodge handle shape, for at least the one I have, I don't know if they've changed this or updated it, is flat to the pan and relatively short. The emerald has a slight inclined angle and it is
curves into your hand.
Is fairly is I don't know, 15% longer and a little slimmer.
Yeah, I've got the emerald grill pan that I use.
But
and it's terrific.
Yeah, the handle on it is
Chinese made, I think, but they're terrific.
But the Lodge handle leaves a little bit wanting for me.
Yeah, fair enough.
But for the grill pan, there's no handles because it's I mean, there's cutouts for your hands on either end to pick it up and carry it, but it's meant to sit on top and then be cooked above. But it's great. I love this. I've used it over a I've used it on my grill on my outdoor propane cooking setup.
Yeah.
I've used it on the stovetop. I haven't put it in the grill. I want to try it as like a pizza stone.
Oh yeah, I bet it would work for that.
In the oven. I think there's I'm going to do some experimentation with it. The problem is I think I might just use it as like a heat conductor in lieu of a pizza stone, like still cook on a different pan
or
on
a different to bring some.
Yeah, just use it to hold heat in the oven. I think that's I'm going to do that tomorrow with a loaf of sourdough as a heat conductor.
And these are what, $50?
$75 at Wilco right now.
I've got a $50 at Amazon.
Yeah, you can. They're not cheap, nor are they expensive, but they're a nice thing to have in your kitchen when you want them.
I've got another thing, Andrew. So this is not knife. This is not a knife, but it is knife adjacent. But this company is really the other thing is the company, but I'm going to talk about that in the context of a product. So as I have been accumulating knives, I needed some additional storage for knives and I picked up a tool roll, from a company called PNW Bushcraft. So PNWBushcraft.com. This is a company out of Washington State. And they make things out of waxed canvas, and they make these on a sewing machine by hand in the state of Washington. And I've been really enamored by this tool roll. So the one I picked up specifically is called the Maple Waxed Canvas Pocket Knife Roll-Up V2.0. I suppose that means this is the second version of this. It has 11 2-inch pockets, a 1-inch pocket, and 3 2.5-inch pockets. It also has one of those 2.5-inch pockets is actually pretty big. I'd say closer to 3.5 or
it looks so much bigger than the rest.
And the 1-inch pocket is less than an inch. It's like pencil sized. But I think that's sort of the nature of things having been made by hand. You know, these aren't precision crafted, rather they're made on a template, and very well made, but well made by hand, right? So like anything where someone sits down at a sewing machine, you're going to have slight variations. But for me, I find that really charming. This product is super fun, and they have got just a ton of stuff. Now, none of this is what I would call particularly like value.
One of their colors is grayish blue. Grayish blue.
And that's exactly the color it is.
It's stone.
It's I would say like baby Battleship, but also gray blue, grayish blue.
Yeah.
It's a really terrific company. They make a ton of stuff. They make these trays. Everything's wax cotton or wax canvas. They make like desk trays, the ones that snap on the side. They look terrific. I've always wanted to get one of those just because they feel like real like bro-y, bushcraft bro-y. I think these are pretty terrific. Pen rolls.
One for your pipe, tobacco, and cleaners.
To the extent you're going to do that sort of thing.
I love smoking a pipe.
I do too. Yeah. We should do that one of these nights while we record.
An outdoor recording.
A backyard like, recording.
I'll get in trouble if we start smoking pipes up here.
and you know, these guys are people. They're people. I think that's the cool thing. I love buying things from people. And this company is very much, I think it's a husband and wife team. And they're just very much people. They make these great ground cloths. The ground cloths are pricey, but they're waxed canvas ground cloths, which are going to give you water resistance and some warmth. Pretty terrific stuff. That's it. That's my other thing.
They're not that pricey.
Well, I mean, for the half shelter size, the six by six
is $219.
Yeah, that's right. For more or less fabric, like.
Yeah, but ground cloth is like waxed ground cloth is not cheap either, unless you're buying a sheet of canvas and tarring it yourself, you know.
That's right. It's not absurdly priced. None of this stuff is absurdly priced, nor is it cheap.
Which is actually kind of impressive for a company like this that's doing really bespoke. Not bespoke. That's not it. Just doing handmade artisanal products.
Small scale.
Yeah. It's uncommon for them to be so reasonably priced.
That's right.
Like typically shit like this is way more expensive because this is $70 for the maple wax canvas.
And so the company is PNW Bushcraft. That is a reference to, I think, like outdoor activities and not like hygiene or trimming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. So, but that's
not manscaping.
That's right. It's not a trimmer company. That's my other thing for the weekend.
That's a good other thing. It's a cool company.
We've done it. We're only 81 and a half minutes in.
Look at us. Yeah. Cutting it short today.
Is there anything you want to add before we get to moving?
You know, I'm all out of things.
Hey, you at home. You. Yes, you. I want to thank you for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor before you go. Go to watchclicker.com and check us out there. That's where we post every single episode of this podcast, but also where we post articles and reviews. We post a couple things every week, and you should check it out. If you want to check us out on social media, where we update you on the things we're doing on the website, you can do that on Instagram, either at watchclicker or at 40and20_watchclicker. If you want to support us, and we hope you do, because none of this stuff is free. The microphones weren't free. The hosting's not free. It all costs money. And we're doing this out of the goodness of our heart, supported by folks like you through Patreon. You can support us at patreon.com/40and20, which is how we keep the wheels on this bus a-turning. And don't forget to tune back in next Thursday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.